Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayan Dang-Bior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, July 31st, 2018. South Sudan says it will resume oil production soon at one field.
Based on the technical assessment, we will be producing 45,000 barrels a day only in Tor and also in Thomas South.
And a local chief says South Sudanese in a fishing community were forced out of their homes last weekend.
Point community does not assert the territorial borders, boundaries, borders of different countries.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. President Salva Kiir has informed his Sudanese counterpart, Omar al-Bashir, that South Sudan will resume oil production in September at an oil field in the former Unity State. The Thor Jath field was shut down when fighting spread to the area in 2013. South Sudan Petroleum Minister Ezekiel Lol Gatkwath told reporters in Khartoum recently that his ministry plans to produce 45,000 barrels of oil per day from the field. A Khartoum-based analyst says the increased oil production should boost the economies of both countries if profits from the oil are used to deliver basic services to South Sudanese citizens. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Lul says the decision to resume production at the Thor Jath oil field, among others in former Unity State, came after confirming that all the technical arrangements are finished. He reveals that they had a joint visit over the weekend to the area with the Sudanese Minister of Oil and Gas and have confirmed all the preparations have been made to resume the production in early September this year.
Based on the technical assessment, we will be producing 45,000 barrels a day only in Tor and also in Thomas South. We will be producing, and immediately after the production is resumed, we will go to Manga and Unity, and by the end of the year, the production in the block 1, 2, and 4 will be fully operational.
98% of South Sudan's national revenue comes from oil. With the increased production, officials say the quantity could go up to 170 barrels per day. Ambassador Lul confirmed that the decision was made based on instructions from President Kiir and al-Bashir during the recent summit in Khartoum. Lul says the resumption of the oil production in the area should boost the economies of both countries.
The commitment is there from the two countries and from the two leaders. That's why myself, I'm here, and I was sent by President Salva Kiir Mayardi to deliver this special message related to the oil resumption. And the president received it very, very well.
Haj Hamad Muhammad Khair, the executive director for the Social and Human Development Consultative Group, a Khartoum-based policy research institute, says the resumption of oil production will boost the economies of the two countries if the money is used to deliver basic services to ordinary citizens. He says the leaders of both Sudan and South Sudan realize they cannot live in isolation.
Both countries seem to come to their senses, and we hope that if the South is more acute, we hope the South will move faster on the peace agenda, while we can really ignore the past and open a new page if both governing institutions become more serious about issues of peace and development and survival of the people and utilization of the resources.
Ismail Fodol, a lecturer at the Institute of African and Asian Studies at the University of Khartoum, believes the conflict in South Sudan has interrupted oil production in both countries.
The resumption of the oil production, Sudan is going to have a lot of benefit from supporting of South Sudan oil through the pipeline. And even if the stability in Sudan and South Sudan, of course, the commercial activities, you know, between the two countries, yeah, is going to benefit Sudan very much.
Sudan lost three quarters of its oil when South Sudan seceded in 2011. For VOA News, I am Michael Atit in Khartoum, Sudan.
thousands of people have been displaced from a fishing village in Bor County after local chiefs and some residents forced them to vacate their homes over the weekend. A local chief in Bor West County says he ordered about 4,000 Thony residents to evacuate, claiming they were fishing illegally in and around the area. Dengai Deng has this story for VOA from Bor.
The head chief of Makolechwe Boma, Achengbul, confirmed he has ordered the fishing community of Thony to evacuate the area.
I was informed them to evacuate the land because of disputes among of the two communities, Thony people and Byong people. A reason for dismissal are as following. Thony community does not accept the territorial borders, boundaries, borders of different countries involving youth from Mokwach County. They both came to fight in our land, whereby they injured five people from youth of Byong.
Chief Bol says his administration has completely banned any fishing activity in the area until the differences between the local communities are resolved. Bol warns should the Thony youth continue to fish, his youth may fight them.
Those who are remanded there now, they are not going to fish again. Because if there is a Byong youth going to fishing, maybe they are going to meet there and fight. So we stop them not to go fishing again.
Kual Amute, a local chief of Thony community, says most of the evacuated people are women and children who have been left without food or shelter after they were forced to evacuate their homes. Speaking in Dinka, Amute accuses Byong community youth of confiscating their fishing nets and wooden canoes and forcing them to leave their houses and farms.
I have evacuated the areas with my people, not because we were willing to leave, but because I am with little children and women who cannot defend themselves. They even disarmed some of my youth, but I told them to wait, not to retaliate, because if they did, something like what happened in Bor South would have happened. Now I'm here in Bor to listen from the government. Here are the children without food and shelter. What to do?
Chief Amute says he is convincing his youth not to fight. Jonglei State Deputy Governor Agot Alier says he has been informed about the land dispute in Bor West County, which has caused displacement of residents. He says he has summoned the chief and the county commissioner to answer questions about the matter, but insists people in the communities are living in peace.
What has happened is some of the people having left their villages and came to the nearby territory of Mokwach County. What we are doing, like I say, we are listening so that we settle on some of the facts to know exactly, because there has been no problem between these communities. They have been staying, they have been living in peace, like they are now, of course. But when it came that they have a situation among themselves, I saw it, and that I better call the chiefs and the commissioners so that they update, inform us.
Governor Alier warns that security operatives will arrest any individuals who intentionally escalate tensions between the communities. Alier says state officials are concerned about the families that have been displaced.
We are trying also to try to find out a possible way, or maybe trying to help some of the vulnerables, okay? Things are not easy also on our side, but we'll not also abandon them, okay? We'll try while we are resolving this so that they go back to their houses. We're trying to find out something to support them in their livelihood.
Alier is calling on both the Byong and Thony communities to remain calm as the state authorities try to find a compromise that will work for all of the communities involved. The Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Coordinator for Bor County, David Ali Repach, says local officials will meet humanitarian organizations over the displaced population tomorrow.
As RRC, we are going to sit tomorrow to discuss on this issue. And at the RRC meeting, we will be calling OCHA so that it is circulated to the humanitarian partners. And then after the meeting with the partners, there will be an assessment to the population displaced, so that we identify what are the challenges and what are the needs.
Alier says his office will assess the needs and challenges of the displaced people after meeting with the humanitarian organizations. For VOA News, I am Dengai Deng reporting from Bor.
The Secretary General of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance has fled to Uganda. Khalil Agokoch says he escaped from Juba last week after he claimed his life was in danger. Agok says men in plain clothes raided his office and broke furniture. He says some officials within the ruling SPLM party are responsible for harassing civil society leaders who are vocal in South Sudan.
There are members within the office of the president and within the national security that have been organizing and arranging, coordinating with Akoja Jang, who is the director of the state affairs within the SPLM, just to dismantle the Civil Society Alliance office and then to override it and work for their own interests, pretending to be civil society members.
Why did you escape from Juba?
I think for the moment, it is really not that favorable for me to be in Juba. I have to be here for some time. And in fact, I will go to Juba because that is my nation. I have never been silent in Juba, and I continue to be vocal until we realize freedom of our operations, freedom to pursue our objectives.
Another member of the civil society was reportedly picked last week by the national security in Juba at Juba International Airport, and up to now he's still in a security detention. Are some of your members under detention in Juba?
Yeah, they were released yesterday. Some members who were trying to intervene while these people were breaking into our office, they were detained, they were arrested. There were five of them. And the issue of BR, also we have spoken about it. He's in detention now, and that is very, something very unfortunate. You cannot be arrested just because of being a civil society activist, talking on national issues, correcting them without any person or any affiliation to any party.
The South Sudan Civil Society Alliance worked very hard during the referendum to advocate for separation of the country. Why is the government of South Sudan now arresting the same people who worked for the referendum, who worked for the independence of the country?
Because we are very vocal. We don't fear them. It began in 2012 when we demanded the publications of the lists of the corrupt 75 members that were alleged to have stolen public money into abroad for 4 billion. And therefore, when Deng Athwe presented our petition, 3 days he was missing in Juba, and all of us who were hiding in Juba. So this is a life that we have experienced. So this has not been one scenario. The interference and the civil society affairs by the national security and the government as a whole has been a frequent action and a process that they are always doing.
The government of South Sudan has been on record accusing the civil society groups of interfering into the country's politics. Is the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance interfering into the politics of the country?
What interference are we up to? If we are saying the corruption must stop, the service must be delivered to the people. There is no electricity in South Sudan. There are no basic services like hospitals are not there, like roads are not there. The economy is too bad. People are in abject poverty. So how can we be silent about this? These are not politics. And these are pure basic rights of the citizens we are talking about.
You are safe somewhere in East Africa and you can talk freely about the issues of South Sudan. What about some of your members who are still inside the country? Are you concerned about their safety?
I know they are in quite a terrible condition because I also experienced such a scenario before when I was kidnapped in Juba on 30th August 2017.
That's Khalil Agokoch, Secretary General of the South Sudan Civil Society Alliance, speaking with John Tanza earlier today from Kampala. Yesterday, we referred to Peter Biar Ajok, who was arrested on Saturday as a political rights activist. Biar is not a political activist. He is the chairman of the South Sudan Young Leaders Forum, a civil society group operating in South Sudan. We apologize for the mistake. Thank you. You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. There's a new way to fight Parkinson's disease, and it may not be what you expect. Find out more when we return.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite game and how is it played?
Cricket. There's a batsman and the bowler. The bowler throws the ball to the batsman, and the batsman tries to hit the ball as far as possible.
Yeah, actually, the favorite game, I like it. I like kickboxing, but when I was since in Sudan there, my dream is just to be a big kickboxer. That's what I like. Yes, it's not about just to kick people, just because I think it's just a game, but I like it. Because me, I like something, can enjoy the play. It's just a game, yeah.
My favorite game is chess. How it is played is we have a chessboard where pieces are set. It is now two kingdoms fighting against each other.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday Help segment. And today, we're talking about a new way to fight Parkinson's disease. Rocksteady Boxing is a fitness program designed especially for people with Parkinson's, a neurodegenerative disorder that leads to tremors and balance problems. The Rocksteady Boxing nonprofit was founded in 2006. Since then, more than 500 boxing programs have been introduced in the U.S. and around the world. Faiza El-Masri visited one of the gyms recently outside Washington, D.C. in Virginia and talked to boxers who fight back against Parkinson's. Faith Lapidus narrates.
First drill is going to be the four cone drill, all right? So we're going to go one big step forward, one big step to the side, one big step backwards, one big step to the side, all right? So we're going to look like this.
75-year-old Neil Eisner was diagnosed with Parkinson's around 6 years ago. He was one of the first group of fighters who joined Rocksteady Boxing Nova last December.
My stepdaughter knew I was interested, and she read an article on it. She saw the news before I did, told me about it.
Eisner says he likes the routine their trainer guides them through twice a week.
I think Alec, who's the teacher, is really accenting those features that are prominent in Parkinson's. For example, some people have problems walking or tripping. He works on exercises that affect the legs. He works on exercises that affect balance.
All right, ready? 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
One of the things, interestingly enough, is you tend to have a lower voice. When you have that lower voice, people can't hear you. You don't realize it. So he accents getting us to bring up our voice clearly and more loudly.
For personal trainer Alec Langstein, working with an older population is familiar. He understands their health issues and the need for them to stay active.
My aunt has a gym in Westchester, New York, and she does a Rocksteady Boxing program there. And she invited me up to her gym to check out the program. She thought it would be, you know, a perfect fit for what I do. And I helped out with a few classes, and it was just, you know, I thought it was such an amazing program.
Langstein went to Indianapolis, Indiana, headquarters of the Rocksteady organization, and became an RSB licensed trainer. A few months later, he opened his Rocksteady Boxing Nova gym.
So a typical boxer's program, they focus on balance, hand-eye coordination, reaction time, footwork. There's some cognitive stuff because in boxing, certain numbers equal certain punches. So when I yell out certain numbers, they have to move and react at the same time. So the brain and the body's working together. And it's the also taking out the aggression that some people may have of having the disease.
To understand how RSB can help Parkinson's patients, physical therapist Danielle Sequeira says it's important to know what triggers the symptoms.
Parkinson's disease is pretty much neurodegenerative. It pretty much mainly affects the dopamine-producing cells in the brain. So therefore, you have a lack or loss of dopamine cells, which contributes to the movement difficulties. The research shows that exercise helps with the brain use the dopamine more efficiently. My goal usually is after I work with someone with Parkinson's disease, I kind of refer them out and suggest that they get involved in exercise programs out in the community.
So far, boxing seems to help Victoria Hebert reduce the symptoms of her Parkinson's. She has a tremor in her left hand and says certain situations trigger it.
Being cold, being hot, sitting with a crowd that I'm not real comfortable with, I'll start shaking. I end up having to sit on my hand just to keep it still.
But with this crowd, Hebert doesn't feel the need to hide her disease.
These people have become very close in the 4 or 5 months we've been together. That's a big part of it, sharing experiences with others. I have to say, it's kind of embarrassing, but over 8 years of time, I never met anybody else with Parkinson's. And then I came here, and it's like a whole classroom. Now it's up to 20 or 25 people.
We're going to do a competition, all right?
Sharing challenges and hope makes these fighters feel they're not alone and gives them the support and determination to keep fighting back. For writer Faiza El Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
Everyone's got to go twice. If you don't know how it's going to be formed.
After a relatively smooth election yesterday, tensions are rising in Zimbabwe as people anxiously wait to hear who won the presidency and other top posts. The opposition is crying foul over the slow pace of compiling official results, even though they weren't expected for days. They say delays provide time for cheating. Both sides are claiming victory. Opposition supporters are dancing in the streets, but police have positioned water cannons in several cities, including five near the opposition headquarters in Harare. Kudzai Zvinavashi has the story for VOA from Harare.
Tendai Biti is a principal in the main opposition coalition, the MDC Alliance, which has been in a tight race with the ruling ZANU-PF. This is the first election since President Robert Mugabe was pressured into resigning and the country has been accused of rigging past balloting. He says delays by the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission, also known as ZEC, in announcing parliamentary results raise concerns.
ZEC is taking its time in transmitting results from polling stations towards and to constituency centers. And this delay is totally unacceptable, particularly in urban centers like Harare, Bulawayo, Mutare, Gweru, Mashingo. The results are not being moved from polling stations to command centers.
Biti said such delays create an opportunity to manipulate the election process.
We know that it is in these periods of delay and uncertainty that merchants of chaos, that bishops of electoral fraud will do their own things. So we are calling upon ZEC to immediately comply with the law and start making the formal declarations at constituencies as is required by the law.
Biti says the commission has not released the 21% of the forms which capture the number of votes at every polling station. This helps independent bodies and political parties to compile their own findings, which they can cross-reference with the ZEC's results when they are out. Biti claims there are plots to assassinate him and MDC Alliance President Nelson Chamisa on orders from retired General Constantino Chiwenga. Munyaradzi Dodo is the editor of Open Parley, an online publication closely covering the electoral processes.
MDC is trying to keep their supporters excited and positive, and I think they're just trying to keep information current and relevant because, you know, in the absence of information, fake news prevails.
Dodo feels the alliance should have waited for the announcement of results by ZEC. He says the alliance's allegations could be viewed as preparation to dispute any results that they may not agree with. ZEC says some of the results for local authority and parliamentary results have already been compiled and announced at respecting polling stations and provincial offices while the nation awaits the presidential results. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinavashe from Harare.
Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission has reported two presidential candidates to police for campaigning outside the allowed time. The offense can be punishable by imprisonment, fines, and possible disqualification from holding public office. The commission refused to name the accused, but some observers claim to have witnessed the violation by the ruling party candidate and the main opposition contender. Sebastian Mofu has more for VOA from Harare.
Zimbabwe Electoral Commission head Priscilla Chigumba said Monday polls opened smoothly, but two presidential candidates were reported to police for serious campaign violations. Chigumba said the commission witnessed two presidential candidates who were still campaigning less than 24 hours before the vote, a violation that could see them fined, disqualified from office, or even jailed. When pressed, the commission chief refused to name the candidates accused of breaking campaign rules.
in the interest of maintaining a peaceful environment whilst voting is going on, I respectfully decline to confirm the names of such candidates. Today is polling day, and we need peace, and we need everyone to be comfortable to go out to exercise their right to vote without fear. Once the Zimbabwe Republic Police has confirmed whether or not there's been any evidence, that information will be shared with you at the appropriate time.
Observers say the commission is referring to the ruling ZANU-PF's President Emmerson Mnangagwa and the Opposition Movement for Democratic Change Alliance's Nelson Chamisa. In a Sunday Facebook video post, Mnangagwa accused Chamisa of striking a deal with former President Robert Mugabe.
Now that it is clear to all that Chamisa has forged a deal with Mugabe, we can no longer believe that his intentions are to transform Zimbabwe and rebuild our nation. The choice is clear. You either vote for Mugabe under the guise of Chamisa, or you vote for a new Zimbabwe under my leadership and ZANU-PF. Real change is coming. We should all be part of it. God bless Zimbabwe.
Mugabe declared his support for the opposition candidate Chamisa instead of his former ZANU-PF party colleague. Rindai Chifunde Vava leads the Zimbabwe Election Support Network, an alliance of more than 40 pro-democracy groups. She says it is clear that ZANU-PF and the MDC alliance ignored the one-day cooling-down period when campaigning is not allowed, and cites other issues.
We also noted the threats in some areas, urging people to go and vote for some particular parties. But as of today, we noted that the polls opened on time in most places. And we also noted the materials were all over. The ZEC officers were in place and also ready for the job. We noted long queues, but of serious concern right now is the exclusion list. People have registered, some have inspected, but they don't find their names on the voters' roll today. So that is really a trend which you are looking in terms of how far and how many people are affected by that.
Chamisa on Monday tweeted that voting delays were a quote deliberate attempt, unquote, to undermine his supporters. It is not clear how far Zimbabwe authorities will go to enforce the rules against campaigning a day before the vote. The commission has been accused of engineering past votes in favor of Mugabe, who ruled Zimbabwe from independence in 1980 until he was removed in November. A ZANU-PF spokesman, Munyara Zipo Mangwana, said the party would wait for the police investigation before commenting on the Electoral Commission's accusation. The opposition MDC alliance did not immediately respond to the reported campaigning violation. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
And that's our show for this Tuesday. We'll leave you with the song Okanga by Balanda from Western Bar El Ghazal. Listening to Okanga by Balanda from Western Bal El Ghazal with the song. I'm Ayan Deng Bior in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.